हरिः ओम्। पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते। ओम् शान्तिः शान्तिः शान्तिः। श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ओम्। विवेकचूडामणि श्लोक 26। शास्त्रस्य गुरुवाक्यस्य सत्यबुद्ध्यावधारणा साश्रद्धा कथिता सद्भिः यथा वस्तूपलभ्यते The author, he is now discussing the sixfold inner qualifications, and we already saw the sadhana chatushtaya, the sampatti, the fourfold qualifications, viveka, vairagya, shamadhi shatka sampattihi, and mumukshutvam. In that, viveka and vairagya are already done. In the third set of sixfold qualifications, shamadhi shatka sampattihi, we have already seen the discussion on four of the six, namely shama, dama, uparama, and titiksha. In previous shlokas, that is, shama is mind control, dama is sense control, and uparama is quietude, and titiksha is endurance or patience. We roughly translated it like this earlier. Now, the Acharya talks about the fifth quality, namely shraddha or faith, we can call it. And the definition of Shraddha, as defined in Tattva Bodha, that is faith towards the Guru, the words of the Guru and Shastra. Guru Vedanta Vakyadishu Vishwasaha Shraddha. That is how it was defined in Tattva Bodha. And when we talk about faith, faith is not just blind faith. We should understand it properly. If something is not logical to me, then I just don't follow that. At the same time, if it is logical to me, if it is illogical, then I do not reject it. Then it will become non-faith. So we need only a healthy faith. So when I cannot understand something logically, I do not say that the statement is illogical. But what do I say? My understanding is not proper. Instead of blaming the statement, I question my understanding. And for clarification, I can analyze again and again several times or clarify with the teacher. When I do that, my understanding gets refined each time. If not logically again, I question again myself. So as we say in actually Taittiriya Upanishad, Annam Brahmeti Vyajanat, Prano Brahmeti Vyajanat. We went on going through several negations. Five times the student, Bhrigu, he comes to the teacher and he thought first Annamaya Kosha, Annamaya is Brahman. And later he thought Pranamaya is Brahman, then Manomaya is Brahman. And he did not get satisfied. He did not criticize the teacher. He went to the teacher again. And the teacher gave each time some more clues and asked him to inquire again and so on. So, till this person was logically convinced, one day when the right understanding of the scriptures, when they came to him, and what is the right understanding again? In the right understanding, I won't see any logical contradiction or experimental contradiction. That is the right understanding. Until I arrive at that, I do not question the teacher or the scriptures, shastras, but I question only my understanding. This is called healthy faith. And Acharya says, Satya Buddhi Avataranam, ascertaining the validity of the Shastra. Satya Buddhi means what? Pramanya Buddhi. It is an independent source of knowledge. Unlike, for example, in the material sciences, physics, chemistry. For example, the words of physics and chemistry are not independent source of knowledge. We have to be careful in this. They are only repeating knowledge which has been derived from perception and logic. And so the words of science are not called pramanam, they are anuvadaha. In Sanskrit, they are called anuvadaha, they are not called pramanas. Physics book is not pramanam. But observation by Newton or Einstein or by various scientists, they are. Since physics, chemistry, etc. are not independent sources of knowledge, they are verifiable by perception and inference. Because if Newton did an experiment and found out, then I can verify the same thing by doing the same experiment and ascertain. Whereas Vedas are not presenting a knowledge which is derived through perception and inference. If Vedas also come under that category, then they will not be called Pramanas. But Anuvadas again. Physics, chemistry, biology, botany, zoology, they are all Anuvadas only. Whereas Veda is Pramana, which is an independent source of knowledge, which is not derived through Pratyaksha or Anumana Pramanas. We saw all these things in detail earlier. And what is derived through Pratyaksha or Anumana cannot be verified by the Pratyaksha Anumana method. What was perceived, for example, by eyes can be verified by eyes. It cannot be perceived by ears. So whatever can be perceived by an ear can be perceived only by ear only and not by eyes. So what is known through Vedas, that is an independent source. This understanding is called Shastra Pramanya Buddhi. And this is the fundamental axiom when we come to Vedas and Vedanta. Therefore, Pramanya Buddhi is called Shraddha. We are trying to understand the term Shraddha. So this Pramanya Buddhi is called Shraddha. When I try to perceive something through my eyes, for example, what do I have? I have faith in the perception of my eyes. If it says something is green, we always many times take all these things for granted. Only when we really look at them closely, we understand the intricacies here. When we say something, I perceive something as green, then how can I verify that? Is this knowledge or hypothesis? It is knowledge for me. Why? Because I have taken my eyes as an independent means of knowledge, having its own status. Similarly, my ears, my nose. Similarly, Shastram is an independent source of knowledge. To get the right knowledge, I should use these Shastras only repeatedly. First time I may not understand. I have to again go back to the Shastra, study it well. Again go back to the Shastras. That is the only way. If you have doubt about what you saw with your eyes, what we have to do? We have to see again and again with eyes only and then get it clarified. Similarly, if there are doubts in Shastras, one has to repeatedly study Shastras only. And this understanding is called Satya Buddhi Avadharana. That is what is used in this shloka, Satya Buddhi Avadharana. And that is why whenever there is an analysis of the Shastras, for example in Mundaka Upanishad, whatever it's quoted there, they will quote only Keno Upanishad or some other Upanishad, and they will not quote some other science or something else to verify what is given in Mundaka Upanishad. If someone asks, how can I accept Shastras, then it is like asking what? How can I accept perception by eyes or ears? Same way. If we say that it is experimentally proved, then what is the proof that the experiment is right? We can go on questioning all this. Then we say that we can see the experiment with our own eyes. Then the question will be, what is the guarantee that the eyes are right? We are assuming that the eyes are valid instruments of knowledge. That's what we assume. Similarly, in the field of Vedanta also, we believe that Shastra is the valid instrument of knowledge. If Pratyaksha instrument is valid in the field of world or matter, then Shastra is valid instrument with respect to consciousness or spirit. We can call it spirit also, or consciousness. So we have got two independent sources of knowledge: Pratyaksha in the case of matter Vishayas, and Shastra in the spirit or Atma Vishayas, consciousness. And there is no corridor between these two. So for all clarification with respect to Shastras, where we have to go to Shastras only, again and again. This is called Satya Buddhi Avadharana. Actually, there is another reading also. This is I use the reading Avadharanam. There is a reading Avadharana, Satya Buddhi Avadharana, ascertaining with Satya Buddhi or Pramanya Buddhi. That reading also is available. So that it is an independent valid means of knowledge. With respect to what? Shastrasya, Shastra Vakyani, and Guru Vakyasya, and the words of the Guru. So the words of the Shastras and the words of the Guru. And now here another interesting point. We accept the words of the Guru because all the words of Guru are derived from Shastra only. We already mentioned this earlier many times. Remember, Guru does not have independent validity of his own if he does not use Shastras. This is called Shraddha. Sa Shraddha Kathita. The words of Shastras are not proved logically, but they do not contradict logically. The words of Shastras are not proved logically. You cannot use logic to prove the words of Shastras, but they do not contradict logically. For example, Shastras say there is heaven, which is a place where devas live. And it also says devas are mortals. So heaven is a place where devas live and devas are mortals. This is a statement from Shastras. Now, the question is, the mortality of devas, is it proved logically? It is not available for observation and inference. If it is a human being, I can see the person dying, he is dead. But in case of devas, the mortality of devas, is it proved logically? No, because it's not available for observation. But at the same time, it is not illogical also. Why? Since devas are also finite, they also should be mortals. Suppose the devas say, the Shastras say that devas are immortal, then what will be our problem? It will be illogical because finite devas cannot be immortal. Because we understand from Shastras that devas are also finite, and because devas are finite, they have to be mortal. They cannot be immortal. This is called illogical. Chinmayananda Swamiji, he coins this word, illogical. Neither logical nor illogical, but illogical. Similarly, here also, Sa Shraddha Kathita. It is called Shraddha. By whom? Sadbihi. Sadbihi means by the Maharishis, by the Sadpurushas. This is called Shraddha. So, this is one of the most important qualifications, or maybe the qualification, so the Acharya says, because it's such an important qualification, namely Shraddha. Yaya vastu upalabhyate, that's what Acharya says. By which alone vastu means here Brahman. Upalabhyate means is recognized. By which alone Brahman, by Shraddha alone Brahman is recognized. Just as the acceptance of the validity of the senses is required to accept the world, if you want to accept the world, we have to accept first the validity of our own senses. If I see something, we should believe I see the right thing, right? So, just as the information given by the eyes is the exact thing, that's what we should first believe. So, just as the acceptance of the validity of the senses is required to accept the world, similarly, Brahman can be recognized only when the validity of the Shastras is accepted. Yaya vastu upalabhyate. Vastu here refers to Brahman, as was said earlier, and upalabhyate means attained. Here it means recognized or known, attained. So that is why Krishna also, he says in Bhagavad Gita, Shraddhavan labhate jnanam tatparaham samyatendriyaha. Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. And actually he tells in the next shloka, Agnyascha Shraddhadhanascha Samshayatma Vinashyati. One who does not have Shraddha, he is spiritually doomed. Vinashyati means he is spiritually doomed. Means what? Vedanta cannot function for that person. That's what Krishna says. So, Shraddha is given the utmost importance in the Sadhana Chatushtayas. Shloka 27.
Samyagasthapanam buddhehe Samyagasthapanam buddhehe Shuddhe brahmani sarvada Shuddhe brahmani sarvada Tatsamadhanamityuktam Tatsamadhanamityuktam Natu chittasya lalanam.
So, having completed the 5 of the 6 subsidiary qualifications, Shamadhi Shatka Sampattihi, the 6th subsidiary discipline called Samadhanam is mentioned in the shloka. Acharya tries to define what is Samadhanam. What is that? He says, Buddhehe Brahmani Sthapanam. Buddhehe Brahmani Sthapanam. Fixing the mind, Sthapanam. Upon what? Brahmani, upon Brahman. Fixing the mind upon Brahman is called Samadhanam. Now, a question might come. How can a person fix the mind upon Brahman? Why? Because these are all preparations or qualifications before studying Vedanta. Because we already mentioned, if somebody has to become an adhikari, the eligible to learn Vedanta, he should have the fourfold qualifications, Viveka, Vairagya, Samadhi, Shatka Sampatti, Mumukshutvam, all that. So now, the person is only in the preparatory stage, and when he is only in the preparatory stage for gaining the qualification, then how can this person know Brahman? To put the mind upon Brahman. He does not know even what Brahman is. Then how can he fix his mind upon an unknown entity called Brahman? So, fixing upon Brahman means what? Fixing Brahman as the only goal of life. The goal of my life is what? To seek out to Brahman. He has got only paroksha jnanam so far, an indirect knowledge of Brahman. He has studied here and there, maybe heard. He has got only indirect knowledge as something which is supposed to be infinite. That's what he has heard. Brahman should be infinite. It is with respect to all attributes and it is supposed to be the cause of the universe. So he has heard all these about Brahman. He has got only a vicarious knowledge or an indirect knowledge of Brahman. That's what he has got so far. He knows that by knowing that Brahman, I will get moksha. That's what he has learned. He has studied somewhere. So, let me go after that. So, if I want moksha, I should gain knowledge of Brahman. I should know Brahman. So, that's all he knows so far. So, parokshataya jnate brahmani buddhehe sthapanam. So, the Brahman that is known by these kinds of hearings and by these kinds of paroksha jnanam, he wants to keep that Brahman as the goal of life. When? Sarvadha, all the time, by all means, he wants, because that knowledge will give him moksha, that's what he knows. So, he wants to somehow know that Brahman. So, whatever may be the pursuit of my life, this person does not forget this goal. He wants to be so steadfast in accomplishing that goal. So, this one-pointedness of the mind, that is called Samadhanam or Samadhi. So, he puts his mind and all his attention towards knowing that Brahman, and that is called Samadhi. And for this alone, the entire Ashtanga Yoga of Patanjali is prescribed. Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dhyana, Dharana, Samadhi, all these things. The Ashtanga Yoga of Patanjali is not for moksha. You have to understand clearly. It is not for moksha or jnanam, but it is useful to develop one of the six disciplines, namely samadhanam or samadhi. And natu chittasya lalanam. One should not allow the mind to get distracted like an indisciplined child, you know, a spoiled brat. You should not be left to wander here and there. Mind should not be left to wander. Lalanam. Lalanam means pampering or wandering. What we can say, pampered child. That is not samadhanam, but focusing the mind is called samadhanam. The one-pointed attention, the concentration, that is samadhanam. Incidentally, when we saw in the shloka 23, shama, where shama was defined, that shama was defined as focus of the mind. Again, concentration or focus of the mind, there also it was defined, shama is like that. And the commentator, the Sringeri Acharya, he makes a subtle difference between shama and samadhanam. We are telling samadhana refers to this concentration and focus, one-pointedness. And there also shama was defined as, again, focus or one-pointedness. And the commentator, he makes a subtle difference between these two. There he says the shama is at the sadhana level, the very attempt to keep the mind in the goal. That is called the shama then. So that practice part, that is called the shama. And samadhanam, that refers to the accomplished state. So the Acharya makes this subtle difference between shama and samadhanam. And this definition of shama as keeping the mind on the goal, this is an unique definition of Viveka Chudamani, where in shama is defined in this manner. But in Tattva Bodha, we did not face this problem at all. There was no confusion between shama and samadhanam. Because that shama was defined as what? Mano nigraha, mind control. Shama was defined as mind control there, thought discipline. Mind control means thought discipline. And concentration was called samadhanam. So concentration was called samadhanam. And thought discipline is called mind control in Tattva Bodha. So, for our practical purposes, we can still keep the Tattva Bodha definition because that is less confusing. Shama and Samadhanam, because they both have, both, you know, they seem to communicate identical meaning here, we have to go for subtle difference, whereas in Tattva Bodha, it is very clearly defined between Shama and Samadhanam. So, with this, the sixth subsidiary discipline is also over. So, Shama, Dhamma, Uparama, Tidiksha, Shraddha, Samadhanam, all of them are over. So, with this, the third qualification is also over. So, we have Viveka, we have already done, and Vairagya, and the Shamadhi, Shatka Sampatti, all three are over among the Sadhana Chatushtayas. Now, only thing remaining is the fourth qualification, namely Mumukshutvam or Mumukshuta. That we are going to see in the next shloka, shloka 28. Ahankaradi dehantan, ahankaradi dehantan, bandhana jnana kalpitan, bandhana jnana kalpitan, swasvarupava bodhena, swasvarupava bodhena, bhoktumichchamu mukshuta, bhoktumichchamu mukshuta. So the fourth qualification, that is called mumukshutvam or mokshata. Mumukshuta here. So literally it means the desire for moksha. Mumukshutvam refers to the desire for moksha or the tivra iccha. Mokshome bhuyat iti iccha. That is how the Acharya defined in Tattva Bodha regarding mumukshutvam. And generally the word moksha is translated as liberation or freedom in many contexts. There is nothing wrong in this translation, but it is not the very true meaning of the word moksha. The meaning should be as tyagaha, giving up. So moksha is the root. Moksha means to give up. So mokshaha means throwing away or washing off or giving up. All these things are synonyms. So that is how it should be perhaps understood. So, in keeping with the true definition, Shankaracharya is giving the definition in this shloka for moksha. He is giving it here. So, moktum iccha mumukshuta. Moktum iccha. Desire to give up something. I want to give up something. So, this is the true translation because it also removes some of the misconceptions. This definition is better because it removes a lot of misconceptions. Like what? If, for example, if moksha is freedom, then what we think? Something has to be accomplished in time. That's what we think. It will look as though we are going to get something. We are going to be free. How do we make the usage? Getting moksha. So we are going to think that something is going to be accomplished in time. But once we translate moksha as giving up, then all our expectations of getting something new will go away. Because it is giving up something, not getting something. So the biggest obstacle in Vedanta is what? Is expectation of getting something either by, you know, so many methods, either in terms of, you know, getting a position or some religious, you know, things like, you know, some religions, they get some new lokas, heaven, Vaikuntha, all those kinds of things, or extraordinary personal things, powers, capacity to predict the future. People think all these kinds of things. The three basic expectations can be classified as what? Extraordinary lokas like Vaikuntha or Kailasha, that is one expectation. Or extraordinary powers or siddhis or extraordinary experiences. So these three things, they fall in the category of expectations. And once a person says moksha is giving up something, this expectation will be gone. Any of these expectations will be completely gone because you have to give up something, not to expect anything. Then the question will be what? Giving up what? What to give up? Giving up of bondage or giving up of sense limitation or sense of inadequacy, sense of missing things, missing people, missing position. They are all these things, they are all giving up. And if we give up any of these things, that gives freedom. That means it is in my hand. Because I only have to give up. Somebody cannot give up for me. I have to only give up. Then moksha is in me, in my hand. If moksha is getting something, then from somewhere, then we will attribute that to the Lord. Lord to do something for me. I don't know when he will give me moksha. We hear people normally say this. I don't know when Lord is going to give me moksha. If we say moksha is giving up something, then it is purely my responsibility. The moment I give up something, I gain moksha when we say that. So how long will I be bound? If people ask, as long as I hold on to the notion that I am limited. So long as I think I am finite, I am limited, I am discontented. So long as I have all these thinkings, I am not going to be free at all. So a person can be free right now at this moment if he or she can give up this sense of limitation. So that is giving up of this limitation or this sense of limitation. So limitation actually can be translated in many ways. And one of the ways of translating limitation here or understanding limitation is sense of localization. I am in this particular place. Sense of localization, which alone leads to the idea of what? Limitation. Because I am localized, that alone leads to the idea of travel. What is travel? From a place where I am to go to a place where I am not, that is travel. Because if I am here, afterwards, where will I go? And how long? After death, how many years it will take for the jiva to reach another body? This is the common question. As all the other questions in life, they are all answered. People ask this question. The only doubts left are after death only for most people. And if I say it is immediate, then what will they say? That is the reason why. Because another body is immediately taken after death. Then the next question will be, why do I have to do Shraddha and all those ceremonies? After all, the person is taking another body immediately. Why to do Shraddha? We are always worried about travel after death, because I have a sense of location or localization. So dropping the sense of localization of bondage or limitation, that is called freedom. And we will be actually having opportunity to explore this further later. So then let me ask the question, why do we get the sense of localization? Why should I get the sense of localization? That will be the next question. What makes me feel that I am here? If we analyze this question, in the Jagrat and Swapna avasthas, in the wakeful state and in the dream state, when the mind and body are functioning, because in these two avasthas, the mind and body, they are functioning, then I have a clean sense of localization and individuality. When I am in the wakeful state and also in the dream state, I have clean sense of individuality. Whereas if I go to the deep sleep state, the Sushupti avastha, where the body-mind complex is completely resolved, then I don't have a sense of localization and limitation at all. In deep sleep state, I don't even know where I am. All sense of time, space, even body, they are all gone in deep sleep state. So the pancha koshas, the body-mind complex, which we will elaborate actually later, they only give the sense of localization. The pancha koshas. We already told the body can be seen as sharira trayam, gross body, subtle body, and causal body, stula shariram, sushma shariram, and karana shariram, are the pancha koshas, annamaya kosha, pranamaya kosha, manomaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha, and anandamaya kosha. So it can be seen as either pancha koshas or sharirathrayas. And among the pancha koshas, the anandamaya kosha does not give much problem, because we sleep off in that state only. In deep sleep state, we are in the state of bliss, anandamaya kosha. So the four koshas, annamaya, pranamaya, manomaya, and vijnanamaya koshas, they are the localizing culprits. As Swamiji says, they are localizing culprits. As long as they are not negated, the sense of limitation and localization will not go away. As long as they are not negated. Therefore, pancha kosha tyagaha, giving up of the idea of the pancha koshas, pancha kosha tyagaha evam, that is limitation tyagaha, or this is parichinnatva tyagaha. That is what one can define it as, giving up of the idea of the notion of panchakoshas. So here when we talk about giving up or negation of panchakoshas, we do not mean physical negation. We have to be careful. We don't mean any physical negation at all. Then what is negation? Falsification. Or understanding that they are like shadow. Shadow of Brahman. We have to understand the shadows only. And I know that shadow cannot limit me or corner me. Shadow cannot do anything to me. I do experience shadow, but I don't feel, circumscribed by shadow. I do experience shadow, sure. When your shadow falls, I don't need to go away from your shadow to give room for your shadow. I don't have to go away. Thus, the whole pancha, the whole prapancha, especially the pancha koshas, that should be reduced to shadows or mithya. In Vedanta, they are called mithya. And mithya pancha koshas can give only mithya limitation. So, whatever as I attribute as limitation to me are only mithya limitation only, because they are given to me by mithya pancha koshas. So my localization is only a seeming phenomenon. I am eternally an unlocalized entity, consciousness. That should be my understanding. I am eternally an unlocalized consciousness. Na jayate mriyate va kadachit Nityaha Sarvagatam Sthanuho Achaloyam Sanatanaha. That's what Krishna says. So, therefore, what is moksha? Shankaracharya he defines here, Bandhan Moktum Iccha. Iccha, the desire to give up the shackles or limiting factors, the localizing factors. And what are those? Ahankaradi Dehantan. Ahankaradi. Shankaracharya, he takes the four koshas here, beginning from the Ahankara. Ahankara corresponds to the Vijnanamaya kosha. So, starting from Ahankara, Ahankaradi, and Dehantan. Dehantan. Dehantan here refers to Annamaya kosha. So, starting from the subtlest Vijnanamaya kosha and taking to the grossest Annamaya kosha. So, the four koshas, Annamaya, Pranamaya, Vijnanamaya, and Annamaya, Manomaya, Pranamaya, Manomaya, and Vijnanamaya. So, the four koshas, beginning from Ahankara, the Vijnanamaya kosha, to Dehadi Annamaya kosha. So, these four koshas alone, they localize me. They give me the sense of limitation. They localize me. The very notion of I is not there when I sleep. When I go to deep sleep, there is no question of I at all for me. I am so and so, I am male, I am female, I am Brahmana, Kshatriya, Shudra. All these sense of individuality, they are only in what level? At the Jagrati level. At the wakeful state only. When the mind is awake. And so, Ahankaradi Dehantan. So, the Chatvari Koshan Moktum Iccha. Desire to falsify them. So, I want to get away from that notion. That is why King Janaka, he was given a name, Videhaha. To indicate his jnanam, he was given a name, Videhaha. Videha means what? An unembodied person. One who is free from embodiment. Does it mean that King Janaka moved without a body? If he had been moving without a body, what we would call him? We'll call him a ghost. Right? So, what do we mean by unembodied? Janaka did not take his body as one which localizes him or limits him. That was his knowledge. Therefore, the sense of localization is dropped. I am unembodied. We can also become unembodied if we can drop the notion of localization. Just as what? The part space drops the notion of limitation by mere understanding that the part cannot merely circumscribe the space. Part cannot limit the space. If part can circumscribe the space, then we can put the space into the part and move it to another place. But there should be no space there, but space is there everywhere. So, the limitation of part space is notional and not factual. That is the limitation of part space, notional only. Similarly, limitation of consciousness is notional and not factual. This understanding and giving up of the notion of limitation, that is called moksha. Moksha means giving up of this limitation and understanding this fact. This is a technical definition given here by the Acharya. But generally, in Bhagavad Gita and all other places, we don't give such definitions because people will think it is too abstract. All these localizations and all that. So, they don't like all that. Therefore, in the Gita, it is put in the grossest form. Gatasun agatasumcha na anushochanti panditaha. Na anushochanti panditaha. You don't have to worry. Krishna says, don't have to worry. Then he calls that moksha. If you say like that, then all people will be interested. Because Gita says, you don't have to worry. Similarly, if I say, Vedanta removes your tension, your blood pressure, your stress, then everyone will be interested. But not localization. If I say localization and all those things, limitation, they are all language that will not attract the common person. So, Viveka Chudamani defines moksha in a technical way. But ultimately, what does, free from, the sense of limitation mean? Freedom from sense of limitation means what? freedom from sorrow only, from sense of death, from sense of insecurity. And that's what it means. When we say freedom from localization. Therefore, ahankaradi dehantan bandhan moktum iccha. Desire to give up. And the next question will be, how do you negate them? Yeah, that also you cannot just, you know, take it and write in a paper and just erase it with a eraser. No, how do you negate them? To negate them, we should first find out what is the ultimate cause. We should know the karanam. One of the methods of destroying something is what? Destroying the cause, its cause. Like, for example, to cure a disease, they say, what do they say? One headache, for example, that can be caused by, they say something like 2743 reasons headache can be caused. Head is only one, but the ache could be caused by so many reasons. It could be eye, it could be the stomach, it could be wife, it could be husband, children, or anything for that matter that can cause headache. They say tension headache, that headache, migraine headache, so many things. So diagnosis means what? Go to the cause. Go to the cause level, the karanam. Then karana nashena karya nashaha. Because headache is only an effect. There are so many karanas. So by removing the karanam, you remove the karyam, namely the effect, the headache. So what is the cause of pancha koshas? If that has to be removed, he says, ajnana kalpitan. It's the whole duality is born out of ajnanam, ignorance, the whole duality. Kalpitan. Kalpitan here means superimposed, falsely perceived, or adhyasthan, ityartaha. So, desire to give up the shackles which are born out of ignorance. And if they are born out of ignorance, how can we remove them? By removing ignorance only. If they are born out of ignorance, they can be removed by removing ignorance only. And how do you remove ignorance? Fortunately or unfortunately, there is only one way to remove ignorance. And that is jnanam. That is the way of jnanam. So Shankaracharya says, swa swarupa avabodhena. Swa swarupa avabodhena. He covered the entire Vedanta actually in these two lines. Like the, you know, in Tamil we have got a thing called a Thirukkural. Thirukkural, normally they say Thirukkural is kadugai thulaithu yel kadalai puhuthi urugathirundha kural. They take a mustard seed, such a small thing, and they put a hole in that and then compact all the seven great oceans into that. So that much of information is loaded in such two-line Thirukkural verses. So similarly, the author has condensed the entire Vedanta in these two lines. What is the problem? Sense of localization. How is it caused? By ignorance. How is it removed? By knowledge. That's all. The entire Vedanta is only that much. So that is what is given here in this shloka. So swaswarupam avabodhena. By knowing one's own unlocalized nature, that I am unlocalized, I am all-pervading, unlimited consciousness, seemingly limited by matter, because all the panchakoshas, they are all matter. So, swaswarupa means Brahma swarupa avabhodena. Moktum iccha. Moktum iccha means the desire. Iccha, desire. Moktum, to give up. So, desire to give up. And therefore, the ultimate goal of the student is what? Is moksha. And what is the immediate goal of the student then? If the ultimate goal is moksha, the immediate goal is to get jnanam, to get self-knowledge. Because we said, already, moksha is through jnanam only, and therefore he says, now I am interested in jnanam. Yes, he wants moksha, he wants freedom, and he needs knowledge to gain that. And this is called conversion from mumuksha to jignasa. This jignasa term also we have seen earlier. This is a very, very big process. Previously, I was desirous of moksha, but I am clear that what I need now is self-knowledge. And only when my seeking becomes knowledge-seeking, then alone the relevance of the scriptures will be appreciated by me. Because the scriptures alone can give me knowledge. So here, moksha is jignyasa, so atato brahma jignyasa. So with this, the fourth qualification also is over. So in sadhana chatushti sampatti, viveka, vairagya, shamadhi shatta sampattihi and mumukshutvam. All the four qualifications are already discussed. Shloka 29.
Manda madhyama rupapi, vairagyena shamadhinam, prasadena guro seyam, pravriddha suyate phalam.
So now all the four qualifications have been already enumerated. Then the natural curiosity for everybody will be what? Which one of them is most important? Because all the four, okay, if you give me one in a nutshell, so that I can at least pursue that alone. If somebody would ask that question, Shankaracharya, he gives the answer here. And if you ask, if you have to choose two of the four, if you asked only one, he gives the answer here. If you have to choose two of the four, which two will be chosen? Shankaracharya gives the answer also for that later. The next sloka. His idea is what? If you do not know where to start, he gives a clue for that also. He says, among the four, which is most important one? He says, mukshutvam is the most important among the four. Among the four, which are the four? Viveka, Vairagya, Shamadhi, Shatta, Sampatti and mukshutvam. Among these fourfold qualifications, most important one, he says, is mukshutvam. That alone makes a person a spiritual seeker. And if that is not there, then also one can study Vedanta. That is true. But you will not be a spiritual seeker, but you will be only an academic scholar. Vipraha. So what Shankaracharya says is what? Ramanuja says, Madhvacharya says, Socrates says, all these people, they all say. And for the sake of getting maybe a degree like MS or PhD, whatever it is, I have to choose something. And so we say, I will choose Shankaracharya's philosophy perhaps. And he will study the entire philosophy in such a detached way. He will appreciate even Shankaracharya, but without any involvement. It will become an intellectual, what? A gymnastic only. So, whether the study should become, the student should become, for him it should be an academic pursuit or spiritual pursuit, the difference is what? Is in the motive. And what is that? That makes the difference. If somebody asks, the Acharya says, it is mumukshutvam, the desire for gaining moksha. And another reason also the Acharya gives here, for example, suppose one has intense mumukshutvam, desire. So even if other qualifications are not there, because of the intense desire, he will take any good step and accomplish that particular goal. For example, if Viveka is lacking, he will fill it up. If Vairagya is lacking, he will fill it up. Because desire, intense desire for gaining moksha is there. So, he will be ready to sacrifice anything for the sake of moksha. That's what he will be ready to do. So, when mumukshutvam is not that intense, then the approach for Vedanta also will be casual only. Mumukshutvam is not intense, be casual only. And the excuses, for example, for cutting the classes, Amiti says this, also will be more and more. He will find some, because he has got tape to listen, no problem. I can listen at leisure when I drive. So he says, manda madhyama rupa api. So mumukshuta. So we have to supply here, mumukshuta. Suppose the desire for moksha is manda. Manda means very feeble. or maybe it's adhama. And madhyama is mediocre. So either he has a so-so desire, okay, let me also go to Vedanta class because I have nothing else to do today. If that kind of a desire, so we have categorized actually desire into three categories. Uttama, uttama iccha, uttama desire means most intense. And madhyama is less intense and adhama is the least intense. Suppose the desire for moksha is feeble or mediocre, manda madhyama, as given in this shloka, even that mumukshutvam pravruddhavavati will gradually become more and more. Because of what? Vairagyena samadhina. As the vairagya becomes more and more. So even if that interest was less, if the vairagya for gaining moksha is very strong, then even that will become more intense. So mumukshutvam also will become more. So directly proportional to vairagyam is mumukshutvam. So vairagyam also implies that other doors for security are closed already for this person. I thought so many worldly things will give me fullness. I thought by gaining this, by gaining that, I will become full. But as I experience more and more, I come to know that the so-called doors are either not there or they are fake doors. They are not real doors. Then the attention towards moksha will become more intense, will be more and more. Therefore, vairagyena, because of the increase in vairagya, and samadhina, because of the increase in shama. Shama is the third qualification, samadhi shakta sampatti. So the mumukshutvam will get more and more and will increase only. And above all, he adds one more thing here. And what is that? Guroho prasadena cha. Most important. Not only by your own individual effort, but also because of the grace of the teacher. The grace of the teacher is very important. This is how suddenly philosophy becomes a religion. In academic pursuit of Vedanta, the student does not have any guru bhakti or anything like that. So 3 credit, 4 credit course, that's it. The attitude will be, as someone is guided in physics and chemistry, he is a guide in philosophy also. But once you say guru kripa, the grace of the guru, the attitude becomes totally different. Just as I have devotion towards the Lord, I have for my guru also. So two things are clear for the Vedantic student. And what are those? Deve parabhaktihi, intense devotion towards the Lord. And tatha gurau, to the guru also in the same way. He has such a bhakti. So such an extent, he does not differentiate between the guru and the Lord. Gurur Brahma, Gurur Vishnu, Gurur Devo Maheshwaraha. So the puja comes, namaskaras come, all those things to the guru, which will not be there in an academic environment, in an university. But the entire attitude will change because of this one word, Guroho Prasadena, by the grace of the guru. And what is the grace of the guru? He is a sincere well-wisher that the shishya should gain this knowledge without any self-interest for himself. He doesn't gain anything by the shishya gaining self-knowledge, but he sincerely wishes and imparts knowledge to him so that he can gain self-knowledge. Therefore, the teacher's grace is nothing but a recommendation letter to the Lord only. Not that he recommends or writes a letter or anything, a sincere wish of a pure heart will make it fructify, will make the desire fulfill. And so, Guruhu Prasadena. Sa Iyam. So, Mumukshutvam. Refers to Mumukshutvam. Sayam. Mumukshutvam. So, this Mumukshuta, this Pravruddha Bhavati, this desire will become more and more intense by the grace of the Lord. And that increased mumukshutvam is called Tivra Mumukshutvam. And that will do what? Palam Suyate. It will produce the result for Vedantic study. And what is the result for Vedantic study? Moksha. It will lead to moksha. Shloka 30. Vairagyancha Mumukshutvam
వైరాగ్యం చ ముముక్షుత్వం తీవ్రం యస్య తు విద్యతే తీవ్రం యస్య తు విద్యతే తస్మిన్నేవార్తవంతస్యుః తస్మిన్నేవార్తవంతస్యుః ఫలవంతశ్శమాదయః ఫలవంతశ్శమాదయః.
సో ఇన్ ద ప్రీవియస్ శ్లోక శంకరాచార్య హీ చోస్ వన్ అమంగ్ ది ఫోర్ క్వాలిఫికేషన్స్. సో ఇఫ్ హీ ఇస్ ఆస్క్డ్ టు చూస్ టూ, ది ఆచార్య చూసెస్ వైరాగ్యం అండ్ ముముక్షుత్వం ఇన్ ది శ్లోక. ప్రీవియస్ శ్లోక హీ చోస్ ముముక్షుత్వం, నౌ హీ చోసెస్ వైరాగ్యం అండ్ ముముక్షుత్వం. Then Shamadhi, Shatta, Sampatti, etc. will easily come if a person has these two. Concentration is easier if in anything where I have love. For example, if I want to have concentration, what I need to love that thing. So when my children come, and the children, they normally, Swami Dayananda, he is very good with these children. They come and ask Swamiji, "Swamiji, I don't have concentration in my studies. Tell me something to gain concentration." Maybe they think that he will give some mantra or something so that he can get concentration. Then Swamiji says, first of all, remove the notion that you have no concentration. That is false. Every blessed person has got very good concentration. Only the question is what? In what he has the concentration? When the very same boy, he watches, for example, the football, Super Bowl, whatever, whether it is 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock or midnight, he is almost in nirvikalpaka samadhi. Eyes do not even move out of the screen. Completely absorbed, that I am not aware of anything around me also. That is why we say samadhi is not unknown to anyone. Everybody knows samadhi. Then why he does not have concentration in studies? If we ask, he does not have the studies as much, he does not love studies as much as he loves football. That is the only answer. So concentration is directly proportional to the interest or love that I have towards something. And so if mumukshutvam is intense, icha, if it is intense, then shamadhi, shatta sampatti will become effortless. He will just gain them. Mind control will be very easy. Sense control, uparati, that is withdrawal from all other things. All those things, because he has all those, while watching the football, he has all of them. So Shamadhi Shatka Sampatti is the easiest when Mumukshutvam is strongest. And so he says, Mumukshutvam Vairagyancha. When interest in moksha and disinterestedness, that is Vairagyam, dispassion, disinterestedness in all other things, when that is there, they are tivram. Tivram means they are intense. Yasya tu vidyate. In a particular person, tasmin evam antavantasyuho. In the case of that person only, the other qualification will become valid. What are the other qualifications? Shamadhi, shatka sampatti, especially that will become very valid on this with this person. His intelligence, his sharpness, especially the capacity to analyze, the logical mind, scholarship, focus, all those things, all of them will become meaningful and will improve significantly. Only when mumukshutvam and vairagyam are there. These two have to be there. Otherwise, he will become another scholar in Vedanta only, academician only. So, tasmin purushe evam samadayaha. Shama, samadayaha means shama will, etc. All those things will come. Samadhis. All the things, samadama, uparama, all those things will come to that person. Antavantaha. Antavantaha means fruitful. They will produce moksha result to him. So the validation or the relevance of shamadhi shatka sampatti is possible only when they are backed by vairagyam and mumukshutvam. And for this purpose only, in those days, all those Gurukula days or even later days, what did they do? They made Vedanta the least available thing in the world for anybody. They didn't give Vedanta freely at all. Or the least opportunity in the world they gave for a person who is a Vedantic seeker. Sannyasis never came down into the world to teach. They never came. Suppose it is made easily available, for example, then anyone can have a casual interest also. If it is made available so easily, tapes, you know, CDs and all that, it will, the interest also will become very casual. Swamiji, actually, he used to tell that when they go to Rishikesh for their training and studies, the teacher did not allow them to have any tape recorder or any of those things at all. No recording. If you don't listen and grasp, you miss it altogether and have to attend the class again. That is the only way. No proper food, even proper shelter, no notebook, etc. All those things, none of them are provided. They make it the most difficult pursuit in the world, namely Vedanta. Why? Because the one who comes face one comes facing all these problems will have necessarily mumukshutvam and vairagya. In spite of all these, if a person is still interested, that means he has got that love and the craving desire for mumukshutvam. So one of the methods to filter the student is to make it very difficult. That's what they followed also. So what happens? Because they made it so difficult, no one came. So nobody came for Vedanta at all. Therefore, what they did? There was the fear of Vedanta going away from the face of the earth. And therefore, they have to compromise. So what the Swamijis did? Whether the student comes regularly or not, whether he comes late or not, whether he records or not, whether he is awake or not, does not matter. The teachers invite students to somehow make them interested in Vedanta. Yeah, and they even did marketing of Vedanta. So Swamiji says, if Shankara sees all these, he will cry for marketing Vedanta. That's what the Swamiji says. Therefore, tasmin evam antavantasyuhum phalavantaha shamadayaha. That's what the Acharya says. Now we'll continue with the 31st shloka in the next webinar. Yo vedadau swara prokto vedante cha pratishtitaha asya prakritilinasya yapparasamaheshwaraha Sri Krishna arpanamastu narayana.